Kelly, welcome back. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm pretty full after the Cook Fest, but I will tell you about the Valley City Petro Surf. So first of all, I love the old one before the remodel, but the new one's fantastic. But they have a pistachio muffin that I barely make it every bite without stopping in to get it. So it doesn't help my waistline, but it definitely helps. That's one of the cool parts about this job. Someday we'll have to do it around the state. I can tell you all the best convenience store food from one end of North Dakota to the other.
It keeps you going. It does. Yeah, last night was a late night. I didn't leave till 7 o'clock and rolled in a little after midnight. Didn't care one whit. Loved every minute of it. Have my usual stops, the whole deal. Yeah, I really enjoyed your talk yesterday before the group because you were talking about sort of how you see your role in Washington, D.C. First of all, this is a fight, and we shouldn't wilt in the fact that it's a fight. Am I right?
Absolutely. And, like I said yesterday, we're about 2 weeks away from the Democrats in the House having a three-vote majority. To understand how marginal, how small that is, it's really difficult. You know, we've had a lot of talk about Senator Manchin, Senator Sinema, and whatever they want, but we've never seen a group of four members of Congress from the Democratic Party flex their muscles yet. So I said this yesterday, and I believe it. The two things that keep the Democrats unified is hating President Trump and climate change. Well, those are two things that are pretty important in North Dakota.
Well, and I also think that, you talk about the climate action, and you're perfectly positioned to be part of these debates, but the climate action is their weapon for everything that is this big, giant target on North Dakota. But they also, when you talk about a fight, they have public opinion on their side. They have young people on their side. If you talk to the CEOs at these major companies, they're as much controlled by the people that work for them that are 30-somethings than they are some, religious belief about global warming. Talk about, what's pushing this, what's behind this, the views out there on the whole climate change issue.
Yeah, I think it's really important to know, and this comes from, picking juries for a living for over a decade, that if you are under the age of 30, 85% of the people under the age of 30, regardless of party affiliation and regardless of where they live, rate climate change as a 1, 2, or 3 issue with high intensity. That means they care about it and they vote on it. And so I think far too often both sides of politics, we end up getting into our echo chambers, right? It's pretty easy to support the oil and gas industry in Western North Dakota, but don't forget that there is a big portion of high school seniors in Dickinson it's hard pressed to find a town that's benefited as much from the oil business as Dickinson. And the other ones are in North Dakota, but there's a big percentage of those seniors in high school in those towns that actually care about those issues too. Doesn't mean you shy away from it. We're proud of what we do in North Dakota, but we have to do a better job of talking about our role in the economy, our role in our communities, and our role of what we do in North Dakota that is really, really important to pretty much every aspect of every citizen's life.
How has this fight evolved from the point of where you sort of just say, that's happy talk, it's nonsense, give me a break, what a bunch of fake science, to, whoa, baby, this is going to roll us over if we don't engage in this fight? How have you seen that just in your time, even with your dad in the oil industry, to the legislature, to Congress? How's that fight changed?
Well, I think the biggest danger right now is the ESG part of this. And this is about, personnel makes policy. And if you look at who President Biden's put in his regulatory agencies, and you've even seen some of this from the big five oil companies of who have won board seats, I think the real fight becomes that they are actually actively pushing forward on things that absolutely will not work. They may work a little bit with a lot of money in highly populated East Coast areas, but they aren't going to work out here now under current technology. So I think that's where it's evolved. Our worry isn't that they're going to succeed, because I don't think they can. Our worry is that they fund this all, they fail, and I said this yesterday too, and I believe this. Two things can be true. More people in the United States are going to drive electric cars in 10 years than they do now. And we're also going to produce more oil and gas and burn more oil and natural gas than we do now. And that's going to happen without any federal legislation. And we're still going to be producing a ton of oil in North Dakota in 10, 15, 20 years. My concern is what happens in the meantime. How much damage do they do to our communities? We called it churn in the oil industry during the boom, and companies losing employees and people moving from Partial to Watford, all of those different issues. But What we don't need in the ag and energy industry, particularly in North Dakota, is more consolidation. And that's what my real fear is as we move through this, we know it's broken. We know it doesn't work. We have to restart a bunch of this stuff in our communities. But what does that do to the, you know, the local business in Watford in the meantime? I mean, we're still going to produce this incredibly useful and abundant resource that we have. But I'm really worried about what happens to our communities in the meantime if they get their way. That's why we fight it so hard.
Questions or comments for Kelly, welcome today on the program, 800-228-0550. You can text Todd, the radio guy, Mitchell, 701-226-8503, or me at 701-367-2054. Get to your questions in just a moment here. Well, how do you see your role in all of this as a member of Congress, as a member of that House that's getting ever closer to, 50-50? And obviously, the polling suggests 2022 looks pretty darn good, so a lot of these folks on the left, Nancy Pelosi and others, are doubling down, knowing they're going to get what they're going to get now, and they better get it. What's your role? What part do you play in bringing the North Dakota story to members of Congress and all the task force on climate action and energy that you're a part of?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy. We talk about what we do here and why it's important, and we continue to do it. But, you know, we've had, first of all, recognizing that the Green New Deal has never been about saving the client. It's about winning elections. That's the truth. It's about government control and winning elections. And then secondly, being able to push forward like places where they don't have answers. And that's where I always try and get to a place. Common sense solutions that they can't answer. And I'll give you a perfect example. So we've had 13 hearings in Energy and Commerce on the Clean Futures Act, which is really implementing a big portion of the Green New Deal and over electrification and renewable. So I continue to point out that for everything bad that is in this bill, the two things that aren't in the bill are permitting reform and litigation reform. And if you think putting a pipeline in the ground in western North Dakota or eastern Montana is tough, try putting a high voltage transmission line through a rich suburb on the East Coast. And if you think, even for the infrastructure, even if they want to give preference only to renewables, even if they want to squeeze out oil, natural gas, and coal, they still need a tremendous amount of infrastructure to do that. I think they have huge feedstock problems, but regardless, they still need that infrastructure. Well, they can't get it done. I mean, their 2030 goals, they won't even permit the transmission to move the product they're trying to produce won't even be built by then. And that's just the truth. And they cannot gloss over it because it's incredibly dangerous, not just in North Dakota, but the whole U.S. economy.
Christian, McKenzie County. Question for Congressman Kelly Armstrong. Go ahead, Christian.
It's Chris. I am a Christian. Thank you for your service, Congressman, and I'm grateful for some of the fresh ideas you just kind of talked about as far as coming up with new ideas and consensus ideas. But I'm a veteran of the military, third generation. We got Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, Army, all in our family. And I've often wondered, on a proactive side, why we haven't repurposed one of our retired aircraft carriers. If you're familiar, you've been through all these briefings where they talk about the ocean weirs and the massive amount of plastic that's floating in small circles in a contained space along the equator in the Pacific and the Atlantic Oceans, with millions and millions, billions of tons, potentially, of plastic just floating and choking the ocean in those areas. Have we thought about, on a proactive level, repurposing a decommissioned nuclear aircraft carrier, like the Enterprise, I think that's going to scrap, unfortunately, or something like that. Massive electricity, huge production space, enormous capabilities, repurposed relatively small on an industrial scale, get out there and start sucking up that plastic and cleaning up the ocean and freaking people out with an original idea like that. Does that ever even come up in any of your conversations?
Chris, not that specifically. First of all, thank you for your service, but I think you bring up a really good point. The reason it doesn't come up is because a lot of, outside of trying to win elections, a lot of this climate policy is really geared towards outsourcing our guilt. I mean, you need a ton of lithium to do renewables. Well, what do you think a lithium mine looks like in China? I mean, you think that's clean air, clean water around that mine? And we do all
it's
of this.
Here too.
I've talked about plastic pollution a lot. But the answer is you can still get your $10,000 rebate on your Tesla and go to a cocktail party in Manhattan and talk about you're saving the environment.
But these are ideas.
Our guilt.
Yeah, let's go on offense rather than defense, because outsourcing our guild is defense. More with Congressman Armstrong after this. Don't go away. Back with Kelly Armstrong on What's on Your Mind. Question for you related to big tech. Listener says, Kelly, what's happening in the fight against big tech? It seems like they're colluding with the left. Will any meaningful legislation be passed to stop them?
Yes, I think so. To give you an idea where I feel on this, Scott, we've just been talking about the Green New Deal, Western North Dakota. We put together a Republican task force, and I asked not to be on the Energy and Environment Committee because I asked to be on the Big Tech Task Force. I think it's the seminal question we have to answer in our time. There are six bills that came out of the antitrust subcommittee that are bipartisan. I will tell you, I'm a co-sponsor on two of them. Four of them have good and bad in them. That's obviously what happens with big tech. But I personally am going to have three bills being rolled out. One is on geofence warrants. One is on actually Section 230, but not necessarily the way we think about it in censorship, but on the product liability side. I think that's one part of 230 that is actually really egregious that people don't know about. And what I, just shortly what that is Amazon gets liable. If you buy something from them and it blows up and you have to have surgery on your hand, Amazon has liability, product liability from that. And it makes sense if you're just truly the middleman. That's kind of how everything works. But we know Amazon's place in the e-commerce universe is not just as a middleman. So that kind of liability needs to be taken away. It's tough because it's typically been a state issue, not a federal issue. But that's really political fiction at this point with these e-commerce people. So I think there's going to be things coming. The flip side to that argument is, you know, we could never get quite to a deal on privacy. It fundamentally came down to private right of action. And if you can't solve that question between Democrats and Republicans, then we move forward. I want to caution everybody on the big tech legislation. I mean, we should have a conversation about whether these companies are too big, because I think with the exception of the East Indian Trading Company, Apple, Google, Amazon, and Facebook are the four most powerful companies in the history of the world. But also always recognize that in the history of the federal government, whenever we've tried to regulate big business, we've ended up hurting small business worse. So how we do this is going to be as important as what we do with it.
Let's see. Three other quick things here by text. One says, ask Mr. Armstrong what you are personally doing about our fellow Americans that are still being held without being charged from the unarmed January 6th protest at the Capitol.
Well, Scott, we should actually probably do a radio show about this. I think we educating people on how federal pretrial works is probably, I mean, it's something I obviously have been passionate about my whole life. There is no bond in federal court. So a judge either orders release or orders detention. And that's, I mean, regardless of everything else about it, they're functionally being treated like they're charged with a crime. You know, we talk a lot about words like riot and insurrection and domestic terrorism. None of those are crimes. None of those are crimes. That is all politics. We're actually starting to go through every actual charge that exists for these people and figuring out whether their pretrial release fits with other federal defendants in the same fit. But it's different than a state court where you get bond. There is no bond in the federal system. It's either release or detention.
So long story short, you get some wacko judge, and it can not only happen with the protesters at the Capitol, it can happen with anybody in federal court anytime, and does every day.
I can tell you this just from a real non-politically charged but also very serious situation. You have somebody charged in Grand Forks County with a felony charge, and somebody charged off the Spirit Lake Reservation with the same charge in federal court, and that Grand Forks defendant will be out pretrial, and that Spirit Lake defendant will sit pretrial until the whole time. I mean, there's just a functional difference between how these things work.
Two other quick things here. One is related to burning of land when we need hay right now. Some have said it was CRP. You thought it was U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Is somebody actually burning what could be used as feed right now?
I haven't heard this like recently, like in the last 8 days. But yeah, U.S. Fish and Wildlife was doing their habitat management plans, which involves burning in the middle of the worst drought we've ever had. And so this is a perfect example of why the federal government should not be involved in anything they don't absolutely have to be, right? USDA and U.S. Fish and Wildlife obviously aren't talking to each other, because you want to maintain that habitat, we'll go hay it instead of burning. So it's absolutely unacceptable, and it needs to stop.
Yeah, the mistake there, I think, is some people have assumed it was CRP acreage, but we have had some reports of that recently. actually happening. So maybe U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
CRP, it might be CRP acreage on U.S. Fish and Wildlife control land.
There you go. Yeah. Wrong, as you say. Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate the time. More coming up on What's on Your Mind, folks. Back to your calls coming up.